When the original Moody Blues began in 1964, did you guys have day jobs?
No.
You were like full-time musicians right out of the bat?
Or as my father used to put it, a musician is someone who'd rather starve than work.
Go Now, the cover of the Bessie Banks song, becomes a number one song for the Moody Blues early in 1965 in the UK. Hits the top 10 in the United States in 65. How did that feel at the time? You guys got a number one song in the UK so shortly after you started that band.
It was a wild ride. It was a bit like, riding fire and ice. We started the band. We rehearsed on May the 2nd, had our first gig May the 4th, was spotted by a talent scout in May, June, July, July-ish, moved down to London in end of July, was in the studios in September, and in the charts in England in January. It was just one wild ride. And of course, we were robbed of all the money, like everybody is with their first hit.
So you've got this chart success. You start touring the United Kingdom, and you're the opening act for the Beatles. Is that true?
On their last but one tour anywhere, their last tour of England, there was we did the first hour and the Beatles did the second hour. Now, you want to talk about a wild ride. That was a wild ride. Them poor guys couldn't set foot out the house, or the hotel room, I should say. I mean, they were coming at them. We all like girls, but not 60 at a time. There's nothing you can do but run for your life.
After Go Now came out, and you guys really didn't have any big chart success after that, the original Moody Blues, you reinvented things. I mean, Clint Warwick left, and Denny Lane, the lead singer, left. John Lodge and Justin Hayward came on. And then, of course, you recorded the now legendary Days of Future Past album, where you sort of fuse symphonic music with your own songs. These are not covers anymore.
No.
And you really were ahead of your time, pioneers of what became symphonic rock. How did audiences first react to this music?
They reacted very well. I can remember the club in London, the first time we played with the Mellotron and that sweeping sound. And they reacted very well. A lot of people came up there and they stood around the front of the stage watching, which was quite the norm back then. And it went down very well. And I think if anybody had added Mellotron, they'd have all done the same thing. It's just the rest of the bands didn't have the availability of getting those sounds, because Mike used to work at the place where they made them, and he modified it so that it was almost ready to go on the road. I did a lot of running repairs while we were out there. I became very good with a wire, an undone wire, a coat hanger, putting tapes back in place, but it was worth it. And as for the album, people say, how did you have the nerve to do it? We didn't know you weren't supposed to be able to do it. You know, we were young and unafraid.
Well, Graham, you're not known primarily as the singer, quote unquote, in the rock and roll band, but
I did do lead grunt on the procession. That's the only time I've
Every good boy deserves favor.
But that's the only time I've ever taken lead.
But you've written a number of songs for the band, and then the poetry. And those poems were an integral part of the Moody Blues' first six or seven albums. No other bands were doing that I can recall. So where'd the idea come from for the poetry?
It was actually when we were recording Days of Future Past. And we'd got a lot of the songs already written, and we were writing songs as we were going along, but we were still doing gigs because we had to eat. And the producer was saying, somebody give me something. I tried to write a song, wrote what I was trying to make lyrics for a song, and I read it out, and said, can anybody put the music to this, make it a song? And everybody said, it's great, right, but it's just too wordy. And Tony Clark, bless his heart, says, well, we'll just read it as a poem.
He is the producer.
That's right, yeah. And that sort of became our tradition. And it became my job, not job, but my pleasure, to write the poem that gave everybody a kind of a hint at what the album was all about.
Well, you've been touring for more than 50 years, and I'm sure you've had a number of odd experiences. Fans, well, the word comes from fanatic. And because of the Moody Blues lyrics, which you contributed to, and the sound of the music and the psychedelic era of the 60s and early 70s, many young people at the time thought you guys had the answer. They attributed some type of cosmic insight to you.
I know, it was so weird.
How'd you react to that at the time?
We wrote a song called I'm Just a Singer in a Rock and Roll Band.
Off Seven Sojourn.
Yep.
And you co-wrote You and Me off that album too, which I think alludes to you're just an ocean full of faces, and you sort of try and explain that you're just trying to figure it out.
Just one of the boys, we just get to ask the same questions as you. We know the answer just about as much as you do, you know. But they felt some kind of connection, and, you know, I'm the same. If Elvis Presley had said to me that he was actually in touch with some cosmic force, I wouldn't have believed him. I'd believe anything he says, because he was Elvis Presley, and he was my hero. And I used to stand in front of the mirror, practicing wiggling my leg when I was like 11.
Yeah. Well, I know fans bestow flowers and poetry and songs they've written, photographs to you guys. What's the strangest thing you've ever had thrown on the stage during a show?
An artificial leg.
What?
An artificial leg. We were playing, and they were all jammed out in the front, and we saw this thing swinging, and I'm looking at it, and I thought, that's a leg. And I'm looking at the boys, and everybody spotted it. We're all turning around looking at it. He said, what's that? And then the guy lets it go. And it flies really funny through the air, because apparently the foot is weighted in some way so they can walk with it.
Yeah.
So instead of just swinging it through the air like it does, it kind of whips. It goes, woo, 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 woo. You know, if you can imagine it. And it was heading towards Justin, and he said he was kind of rooted to the spot because he didn't know which way to go, because he wasn't quite sure where it was going to go. But anyway, it landed back on, it missed him and landed on the stage, and Roddy came running out and he picked it up. And he said to Justin, what shall I do with this? And Justin said, throw it back. So he threw it back out there, and at the end of the show there was no leg and nobody left hopping about, so I assume he got his leg back.
So how has touring changed for you after 5 decades? Is it more enjoyable now, or?
It's not so stressful and exciting now, so I enjoy it in a much calmer, but somehow I appreciate the audience more kind of way. You know, I look down at them now, and I enjoy them, and I look down, I could see about 10 rows back, and I pick couples or gangs or, you know, bunches of people, and I watch them, and you see them when you start a new song, and they look at each other if it's a favorite and a thing like that, and I play to them and I steal their energy.
Graham Edge, musician, poet, drummer with the Moody Blues, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. You miss stand-up comedian as well.
Okay, stand-up comedian. Thank you, Graham. You take care,
okay,
buddy.
Okay, Steve, I hope I see you in Atlanta.
Will do.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye.